Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I have a great show for you tonight. This is a very interesting show because we're going to talk about style and a certain type of style to writing in songwriting, utilizing the guitar. And my guest tonight is John Wicks, and he is of the group The Records. That's probably what he's most noted for, but he's a great singer-songwriter, and he's a good guitar player. He told me in an email that I just do arpeggios, but he does some really interesting stuff, and I think it's important because it sets up a style of music in his writing that's very unique, and he uses the guitar chording. It has a melodic and a hook in a song. So it's, as we listen to what he's doing guitar-wise. I'm going to play a clip called Different Shades of Green. And listen to what he's doing because the rhythm guitar or the main guitars are vital to the whole setup of the song that set up the vocal. So here's Different Shades of Green. Back. Before we get into it with John, I just wanted to talk and say hi and thank Lori Reamer for coming on the show.
You're very welcome.
And since we have a moment real quick, he's grabbing one of the guitars and trying to get it in tune real quick before we bring John back on. We might as well talk a little bit about what's coming up.
Yeah, we could even talk about what just happened. I mean,
okay.
I met John a year ago. And he's been involved with our tribe shows. He brought Debbie Peterson from the Bengals in, and they did a duet for our Christmas show. It was awesome. And So he's hooked. He's been with us ever since, and he's been playing records shows, little pop-up shows around town and mm-hmm. festivals, and he just did a thing at McCabe's, which he can tell you guys about, and we love having him here in L.A.
Well, I want to welcome John coming on the show. It's really an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
And what I want to do is we played a little bit of Different Shades of Green, and I showed the middle part. I did an edit. Understand, all these songs are songs, so there's a lot of vocals, and I've edited the parts to show the guitar parts, but there's more to the music in it to do justice. I am showing the focusing on the guitar parts, but there's a lot of the songwriting is excellent, and you I recommend that you get the album. I think this is, if I'm correct, this is from the anthology. These clips.
It's actually Rotate. It was the reissue of reissued by Fuel in 2011.
Okay, so different shades is from Rotate. Okay,
yeah.
Anyway, let's talk a little bit about your background and your influences and where you and how you, so we can get an idea of where you came from to develop the style that you do, because it is a unique sound, and it's hard to describe it. We were talking a little bit before the show, and I understand the use of the chords and stuff, and we were comparing notes and we were talking, because I remember one of the guys that really did a lot of chord based music where the chords were important was The Who, and part of that was necessity as a trio. But let's talk about your influences a little bit. What were you into, and how did you get to where you are in terms of your music and songwriting?
When I was really young and I just learned how to play, I used to do the like variations on the regular chords that were jangly, and that was way before mm-hmm. I'd heard the Birds or anything else. It was just something I kind of experimented with, because I started songwriting pretty young mm-hmm. age, and so I'd do these chords where I'd leave the top strings ringing, that kind of thing, which is Starry Eyes ended up being that kind of song. And then as I got older, I was in cover bands and just start my career off, really, and it was more conventional shapes of chords, mm-hmm. you know, playing in that. And I kind of let it go for a long time until, you know, I guess about the records. And Eddie and the Hot Rods had a song called Do Anything You Want to Do, and it was written by Graham Douglas, who was a friend of mine. He used to be in the Kurzel Flyers, mm-hmm. the band I was in before the records. And I said to Will Birch, who wrote the lyrics, I said, I've got to write a song like that. It's got a, you know, it's a jangly thing. It reminds me of when I was a kid and I'd do all these things before I really knew mm-hmm. much about mm-hmm. guitar. And that's how Starry Eyes was born, basically. And I actually really learned to play. I went to school with Mike Oldfield, Tubular Bells guy, mm-hmm. and he was just like unbelievably good. Like when he was 10 years old, he was like mm-hmm. doing all this amazing stuff, and I learned to play guitar watching him. He played Donovan's Catch the Wind one day and just strumming, and I just went home and mirrored the chords, and suddenly I could I get a chord book, and that was it, and I could play. I didn't really need the lessons. I'd had some lessons, but they'd teach me how to play When the Saints Go Marching In.
Yeah.
Like just lead guitar. And I felt it was round the wrong way. They were sort of teaching me to play solo guitar before I'd got the basis of the chords. Mm-hmm. And everything for me comes from that.
And, you know, where was your childhood? Where did you live?
I lived in a place called Reading, Berkshire, which is about 40 miles west of London. Mm-hmm. That's where I grew up. Mike and I went to the same school. We lived on opposite hills, like about sort of 3 or 4 minutes away from each other. And so it was easy to go around his house and him come to my place. And so that was really the beginning of learning something, because we met another guy called Edward, who was a banjo player, and he was older than we were. Mm-hmm. And we went to the Red Cross. Our parents sent us to the Red Cross, and we formed a band, and I was the only one really that couldn't play. Yeah. And so I'm within this guy, you know, Edward's playing If I Had a Hammer, you know, the Trini Lopez cover, you know.
Yeah.
And I forget who wrote it, but... And he was, like, great, and that was his party piece. And, of course, Oldfield was really sort of, like, accomplished. His sister was a folk artist, and his brother played flute, so they were a musical family. And so I felt kind of left out, because I really really didn't know how to play at that point.
Well, we're over here from America at the era that you're talking about. We only heard once the Beatles came, we heard some of the other stuff. But what were your influence? I mean, besides the Beatles, I'm sure everybody was influenced by them. But the Mercy sound and all of that, was that part of that type of jangly sound that you were talking about? Or
I kind of did it before I even heard that. And then when that came out, I was like, it just took me into another level. And that's when I really wanted to get serious about writing songs. And I started off, and it wasn't very great at the beginning, but I soon kind of picked it up. I think my mother was a classical pianist. She played the classics on the piano, and that's when I was young, I got introduced to that without really realizing it, and nobody told me to like it. I just thought, wow, this is incredible. And I don't know why I liked it, just because it was good. So there must have been some genetic thing that I got from her, because I had a sense of harmony at a young age. I knew how to kind of do things like that. So I think that was really the basis of it. And I just remember it was great playing the McCabe Show yesterday. I remember Rhythm of the Rain. It used to come on the radio, and thinking how great this song was before I'd heard the Beatles and really sort of got a bug for it. And then I've met this guy now twice, Jean-Claude Gumeau, I think his name is. And it was just awesome to sort of like be in the same room as that history, you know.
Well, what did you use on Different Shades of Green? Because that sound is pretty distinctive, so
yeah,
I think it bears going in more detail. What guitar and what amp, or did you use an amp?
Yeah, I think it was an amp, but it was just something in a studio. I don't even know it was anything I had. I can't remember.
Now, was that recorded in England?
No, that was recorded over here.
Over here.
Yeah, and I wrote it over here. I was using the Les Paul Junior. It was a 57. I used to have a 56 that got stolen, and I had a 57 still, and I kept it for years and years. And I think some of the sound you're hearing on that, is attributed to Bert Nevere from the Knack, because he came in and did the lead stuff. So he did a lot of overdubs on top of that. So a lot of that big guitar you're hearing is him.
And he
aped what I did, and then just brought it out even more,
because there was a thing I was asking before the show in the background. It sounded like an Indian instrument. Was that the guitar?
Yeah, he did a kind of, we wanted that kind of
That's very interesting. Well, let's play another clip. I'm going to play Edges of a Dream.
Yeah.
And let's take a look at it and break it down a little bit, how you approach it. Here's Edges of a Dream. So you get that real jangly sound. It starts out with the muted upper part of the chord, and then you go for it. But you do like an it is a kind of like an arpeggio type of thing.
Yeah,
but it has it's a distinctive kind of thing though.
Right, yeah. And that's much more of my guitar on that one. I think I remember that one, That Girl Is Emily and So Close to Home were kind of recorded about the same time in a place called Big Mo Studios in Kensington, Maryland. And I remember I was trying to produce it myself with the engineer, and he wasn't really used to working. His name was Greg Hartman. He was really good, and he wasn't really used to working with someone that did so many harmonies. And it was they were called Big Mo because it was a mobile studio, and they had two trucks, and we had the bigger truck, mm-hmm. and it backed into the and it was a huge room. And I remember it was a big Marshall stack that I was playing through, and as you probably know, a lot of Marshalls are not all made equal, and some are good and some aren't. And this one was a good one, and I had this great sound. I remember it was deafening in there. It was a big room, and I think, wow, this is really good. So I went in the truck to listen to what it sounded like, and then it was this distortion, but it was all mushy. It was like, I said, it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like there's body in the sound. That's what I'm looking for. I want the edge on the edge of it, but I don't want it to be mushy distortion. Mm-hmm. I can't stand that, because there's no body to it. And so he came out the truck and he went in and listened to it, and he said, oh yeah, I can. And then he eventually captured it, but it took a while. It's not easy to do those kind of guitars and capture that real power in the studio. It really you need a good, really good engineer that knows what they're doing to
right.
do that.
He did it. Yeah. In a good sounding room though,
yeah,
and you pull the mics and let it breathe a little bit.
Yes, yeah.
They
yeah.
sound that Marshall must have, it would sound
yeah.
great.
That's what he did. He adjusted the mic in, and that brought it
but,
out.
But it seems to me your sound, at least what I was hearing there, it's not like today. A lot of guys like fully blown gain, so they get this incredible sustaining gain.
Yeah.
You pull it back a little bit so that it just, if you dig in, it breaks up.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't like go out of control.
Yeah. That's kind of why I've got so many distortion pedals, and I just don't like any of them. And they just, to me, they all make everything turn and mush. It all sounds compressed and small. And my guitarist Dennis Taylor knows a lot about this stuff, and he said try the Egnator Goldsmith, and I don't even use the distortion side, the overdrive rather, I just use the boost, and it just for the rhythm and the riffs I play, it breaks up just enough to kind of like Malcolm Young was in AC/DC.
You're plugged in. You're using your Les Paul Custom.
Yeah, and then of course this is totally through. This is not through.
This is direct, but it sounds.
It's not too distorted, especially when you're playing through an amp.
It just has that grit to make it do something.
Because I don't like it when it's just distortion and there's no body to the sound. It's like kind of someone singing like Rod Stewart, but it's all gravel, but there's no voice left.
Well, now, for example, like your gig last night, what amps do you use? What kind of amp?
I just actually bought a new tube amp for the first time in years. It's a Supro.
Okay.
And I believe they were around in the 60s, mm-hmm. and I don't actually remember them. Maybe that was an American thing. I'm not sure because I was in England then. And it's some young guy runs the company, and he just sort of got a bunch of people together to invest in it, and they make them to order, I think, pretty much. And I was actually just about to buy a Fender Deluxe 65 Reverb or mm-hmm. one of those kind of amps, and I liked it. I thought it was good. And the Supro was sitting behind it, and I said, "Can I try that?" And I plugged it in, and I just thought, "Wow, this has got so much bottom end in it." Without mm-hmm. whereas the other one sounded like it sounded good, but it was like missing all that.
Yeah,
and I had, there was a young kid in there, like maybe I don't know, he was really young, but he was really playing a PRS and he was really good. And I said, like, hey, tell me what you think. I said, I think I got good ears, but I said I might be wrong. I mean, tell me what you think of this. And then he played the two together, and he said, oh yeah, this is really. And then another guy came in, it was more of a seasoned musician, and said the same thing. So yeah. It really confirmed it. And so I just took a chance. It's only got one channel, and it doesn't do a lot of different things, but what it does do, it does
yeah,
really
it's just
well.
Simple and basic.
Yeah.
But the I'm surprised that for the jangly sound, you wouldn't be attracted to like a Vox.
I did think of a Vox, but one of the things that you know, I mean, I've used a lot of Vox AC30s and stuff when you've used back lines, and I really like them, but. There's a whole thing, and I didn't really actually try it like that, but some of them don't take pedals well, so you get into that
That's
whole
true.
Thing.
That's true.
Yeah, and then there was a bit of a...
But Gretchen Vox used to get that twang to
yeah,
it. I mean, not just the Beatles, but a lot of different people would get this interesting sound of it. Even a Strat, it had a character to it.
Definitely, yeah. I think that's why they're so popular, because they really are good. I mean, I've used them quite
a bit. Your Supro, where did you set your volume? About 4 or 5?
No, I mean, it's like on 2, and it's like...
Oh, really? So it's even that clean?
Yeah.
You're not even pushing it?
Yeah, and I mean, if you do it, like, what I like about it, if you don't have the boost on at all, if you want a clean sound, it's just sparkly. It's just such a great sound, and it's got so much, on the bottom strings, especially like when you're playing straight into the amp rather than like we're doing now. And like I said, with this boost pedal, I can set it so it's almost like Malcolm Young in it when he was in AC/DC. That kind of rhythm sound. You can really get that where it just. It's not quite as distorted as it would be if you were playing lead, but it's just in between. But it's not like that distortion where it just turns to...
No, I call it bloom. It just kind of blooms with a little bit of harmonic content. Yeah. It's just enough to give it character.
Yeah, I've referred to it once, which is like an oxymoron, really, but clean distortion.
Clean distortion.
Where it's like, it's more controlled. It's like, and it just sounds
well, you
so
need
much
when you play those and you arpeggiate or strum those chords and chime them out, you have the grit, but you hear the notes.
You hear the notes, exactly.
Like that last clip, you can hear all the notes.
Yeah. And that's what I want. I don't like it when it turns, because it just, you defeat the object of having the big guitars, because you've got no body, and the whole point is for the air, move the air.
Right.
Like speakers when they're not working efficiently, until they're turned up to the point where they really work the cones.
Yeah.
That's what I
when you get when you get that to bloom a little bit, it gets then you get that interesting sound.
Yeah.
Now, on Edges of a Dream, did you do the leads?
No, I wrote them into the song. And there was a young kid, sadly no longer with us. He died really young, and he was like, I think he was 19 at the time, and he worked at the studio. We were between lead guitarists at the time. It was one of my lineups back east, and so my friend Gary, who was a guitarist and a bass player, was playing bass for me, and so he did some of the guitars as well as me, and we just happened to say to this guy Chris Abshire, and his dad was Steve Abshire. He was a big jazz guy. In the Navy Commodores, and he played around the DC area where I lived at the time, and anyway, Chris had inherited that, and he loved PRS guitars, and his big idol was Eddie Van Halen, and so he was just a delightful kid, and he said, well, I know you said you were looking for a lead guitarist. Did I play lead guitar? So we just thought, okay, so I gave him the things, and then he just played them. But I mean, I could play him. But I mean, he's a lead guitar.
Well, it was interesting because did he use the Marshall too? Did they use the stack?
I don't know what he used on that.
Because he gets feedback. He's getting feedback.
Yeah. I just basically like showed him what the notes were and sang them to him, and then he just played them and with a lot more feeling than I would. I mean, it's so then he, the next thing we know, he's sort of in the band, and we're taking him over to Spain, and he's never done any of that before, and he was such a sweet kid. I mean, and he just worked for the studio, and that's he spent about a year with us, and unfortunately he was 30 years old, and he got some kind of cancer that was really rare in his and it killed him, and it was very sad, but he was we had a lot of fun with him. He was really...
He's got a great sound. I mean, he just got... It was really interesting. Now, besides the Les Paul Jr., what other guitars have you used? Do you use 12-string? Because there's... Now, I'm going to play at the end of your big hit, Starry Eyes, And it sounds like there's 12 strings in there.
Yeah, this Starry Eyes that you're going to play is the new one that he did for Fuel in 2011. I did Tina Armour as well, which is another song. I've been wanting to re-record them because the single Starry Eyes was just basically a demo. We didn't know that was going to end up being the single. There's a lot of reasons for why it did, but so I wanted to do it sonically better, but like still capture the excitement. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult to do, and I've had a lot of attempts over the years that don't never got out of the studio. Mm-hmm. And this was finally, we got it as right as I think we could, and I thought it was really good. But on the original, I wasn't a 12 string on it. It was just two of us playing, you know, and it's
it just worked
beating off each other. It sounded a bit 12 stringy, but the problem is back in those days, you know, you're shouting over the thing, and the arpeggios were never played the way I'd written them, and that's I had to kind of sit down afterwards and think, let me get these arpeggios right. They were meant to be like this, and so that, you know, I got the arpeggios right on this new version, and but I think there is a 12 string on this new version, but it's mixed right back in with everything else. Okay. But there is one on this one.
But you never used a 12 string live, Ricky?
No, not on that.
Because some of it some of the different songs have that kind of sound to them, but it must be the doubling.
Though. Yeah, the doubling. Yeah, that did it. And I do have a 12 string. I don't have a 12. I wish I had a 12 string Rickenbacker, like electric, but I've got a 12 string I bought from, do you remember a place called Dr. Music that was in Eagle Rock in between, on Colorado, I think it was. Mm-hmm. My then guitarist at the time worked there, and I forget the guy's name that was running it. I called him Doc, I guess. And he decided he wanted to be out of it, and so he liquidated everything, and I went in there, and I didn't have much money at the time, and I was thinking, well, I found this old 12 string. It was a Sunlight, and it was a acoustic, and I haven't got it here today, but and it wasn't the greatest 12 string, but it was $100, and I thought, you know, I could use that just for songwriting or something. Mm-hmm. And it needed something, some stuff doing to it to really be any good for playing out. I couldn't have played out with it. And then some years later, after it sat in a cupboard for ages, I took it to True Tone. I said, look, I know you'll probably laugh about it, but it, you know, he said, oh, I think they made these in China. It was a Chinese guy that like guitars that made it, and it was an okay guitar for $100, and I spent $130, I think, having it set up. And I play it out now. It's really not a bad guitar. There's better ones out there, of course, but for like a couple of hundred bucks.
Well, even some of those guitars that were made in the Orient at the time, they had the woods, and some of them were solid.
So yeah.
And so once they age,
they get better.
They really sound great. Yeah. So yeah, that you'd be surprised. I mean, I have a couple of guitars that are not big items. In fact, it's interesting because I had I have a Yamaha FG-180, which was not an expensive guitar. It was like $180 or something like that, under $200. They're now making a 50th anniversary of that, which is all, I mean, it's much more expensive, but it's amazing because the guitar aged well. I've had it since high school, and it sounds great.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a fancy guitar, but the woods were good and it was built right.
Built right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of guys I would see play some off-brand 12 strings and even 6 string acoustics, but they sounded great, and they just had a unique sound to them.
Yeah, Alex, who did the stuff at True Tone, he actually said, listen, it's really interesting because it's for a 12 string, it's got the electrics in it, and it's got a chorus built into the 12 string. Mm-hmm. And talk about, like, you know, like if you wanted overkill on it, but I mean, it's actually pretty cool. I mean, I sort of think, why didn't they do that with the Martin? You know, put a chorus in it, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, I actually really like it for a guitar like that. So I bought a thing from Michael's that was in a little metal plate that says Inspire, and I just put it on the, you know, on the top of it, so it looks better than sunlight. But it's a good guitar. I've written some good songs on it, actually.
Because that's an interesting sound. I mean, I've used 12 string a lot. And how do you approach it? It's not as limber as a 6 string. I mean,
right? Yeah, yeah.
But it fills it out.
Fills it out, yeah. And the thing is, I also find with them like a bit of a pain if you want to put a capo on it, you know, because you know they're. I think they've got to be incredibly well set up to sort of not you know, have to keep retuning it. And
yeah, well, it's hard for that capable. The parallel strings runs much lighter than the other, so it's hard to get it to press down.
Press down, But yeah, someday when I can get past the fact that, you know, if you want to write something like The Birds, it's got to be as good as 8 miles high. If I can get past that, something.
Well, the electric ones, like the Rickenbackers, it's easier to play easier the action player.
Yeah,
12-string acoustics, depending on the guitar, a lot of people tune them to D because the tension's so high.
Yeah. Actually, I did for a long time, actually. I had it detuned a semitone, and I just tuned it back up to pitch. I don't know what made me do that. I just felt like doing it. I might change it again, but it was getting kind of difficult because I was working with Debbie and we'd written this song, "Reach for the Sun," and it's got like a riff in it. You know, it sounds great on a 12-string, not so much on a 6-string, but. And of course, because it was tuned down, we had to sort of figure out whether she could capo it on a regular 6-string and then play along with. And now I've tuned it back up again. That's going to mess it up even more. So she's going to have to move the capo if we do it like
that. Yeah, no, and that was a big problem with the Martins too, because they would bow.
Yeah.
Because it's just a lot of tension.
Tension, yeah.
But a few of them, like Guild and. Giannini Craviola makes a nice 12-string, and those are dual truss rod.
Yeah,
so are the Rickenbackers, by the way.
Right.
They had two truss rods, so it had enough power to hold those.
Yeah.
So you could go to because tuning it to E, there's a whole different harmonics to it.
Yeah.
And it has a different chime to it too than a D.
Yeah.
The D is a rich sound, but you get that.
So you're talking down a whole tone, right?
A lot of people would tune to D.
Yeah. I might try that, actually. That might be an interesting thing to see whether that...
Well, your acoustic, the sunlight, it might get more resonant. I don't know what your sides and back of the guitar, if they're like mahogany, it might get a nice deep sound.
Yeah, I'll have to try that and mess around with it,
And a lot of guys now are using... they're tuning it like a baritone, like it's a fourth down.
Yeah.
And that's interesting sound, too.
Yeah. I did sort of find... it sounded a little more droney sounding, like tuned down a semitone. So yeah, I might mess around. I mean, that's the ideal thing. If you had like the money that you'd like to have, it's like you'd have a wall full of guitars, and it'd be like with a note on saying this one's tuned this way. This is dad gad. This is drop D. This is, you know, and so you don't have to do it. You just pull it
and do it. Yeah,
that would be the ideal thing.
Now, do you use different tunings, or you pretty much just stay to standard tuning?
For the most part, but I do when I'm trying to write something. And I mean, again, if I had more guitars, I'd probably. But I sometimes do a thing where I'll tune drop D on the bottom string and then drop the top E to D as well. And when you get up the neck, which is why I like the cutaways, you can get some really interesting jangly sounds with that, which you, when it's tuned up, you know, regular, it's not quite the same, and it just sounds cool on certain things. But the problem is, if you're doing a gig and you got the one guitar, you know, you kind of want to pick another one up instead of doing that every time.
Yeah.
So I tend not to do the dad gig, but what I have got is an interesting thing, is one of those cut off capos, which actually effectively does that dad gad tuning. And if you put it on, it's not much good it's only really any good for most things, like on the second fret.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get some really great, and it sounds like it's, you know, and you don't have to detune anything.
That's very cool.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
I wrote this song, Magic in My Heart, on that, with that, using that capo, on there. But of course, it doesn't work on the 12 string because it won't quite get across the strings.
Do you have that device?
Yeah.
Do you want to show us it?
Yeah, I can show it to you. Yeah. Let me.
Is that that's acoustic?
Yeah, that's acoustic.
Yeah. And while he's getting his switching guitars, we're going to talk a little bit in a minute about his acoustic setup that he uses live, because he's got a very interesting setup, and
it's very very strange.
Now he's pulling out a Martin, and do you know what model that what Martin is?
It's
that?
It's a D160 or D160 GT or something like that. I think it's DC160 GTE. So it's like a I think it's a variation on a D16,
mm-hmm.
Which are the sort of, you know.
Do you know what kind of wood that is? Is that?
I think this back is they call it. I think it might begin with R.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I'll take a picture of it while you're holding it right there. I know I should have them put it on, but let me take a picture of that. That just looks beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great. Because I've dinged it on the front, you know, like you do. Walking past.
And it's got the whole, that's a Fishman system, right?
No, this is actually, I don't think they're doing them right. So it's just a Roland, like a COSM preamp. And I like it because when I started looking at guitars, they had those ones that got like three little rubber buttons.
Oh, I never saw a Roland system in a Martin.
Yeah, they did it for a while. I don't know if they're still doing it, but I like this one actually. But what I didn't like is, and I think Taylor do the same thing too, and it's like a triangle of and they do too many things, and it's like you press it and one's a tuner, but that's easy. But the rest of it, I just think it's a bit. I like to sort of see it, and this is good because it's got the tuner built in. It's got a good EQ on it, so that you press it for that to get the tuner on. I better plug it in. That helps. The only thing I don't like about this Martin is that the battery compartment is very, very fragile. Mm-hmm. I think that's a bad design, but I mean, I guess. This thing is really kind of.
Oh, let's take a look at. He's going to put that on, and I'm going to take a picture of this. Yeah, this it's like a part. It's like a mini.
It's half capo. Freebo does a lot of that too.
So it's got.
That's really interesting. I gotta get one of those.
Yeah, it's.
I'd spend hours trying to figure out how did he finger that. There's no way.
Wait till you have the show with Freebo. He'll put a half and a whole.
Yeah,
one on.
Yeah. You can do that.
Incredible.
Too. I've seen
sound.
Them, and there's books on this. So I mean, I'll have to get one at some point because it's got the whole book shows you that how you can put all the. Of course, then you know you go to gigs and start losing them. Where's
but you're capoing the A, D, and G string, right? Not the E string.
Yes, it's the B and the. So it's just the four, last four. The,
what
the,
about the low E string? Is that
no? It, that's free.
Does so it still ring? Yeah, so you can hear the E string.
Yeah.
Seven. That is very cool.
And of course, it's got one of these.
Oh, wow. That lever.
So.
Oh, so that little lever, he has a little lever that actually will push down on the E string.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. I haven't tried doing that yet much, but yeah, so I just thought it was interesting. So
wow, that is great.
It opens
it's
a whole new world.
And you're still in a standard tuning, so you can always just pop it off and you're back to where you need to be.
Right, but the sound is completely different.
Yeah, and when you get that whole thing where you feel like lack of inspiration because it's the same old. You put that on and you kind of don't know what, and that's what's the great mystery. Lennon said that, like when he knows enough piano to sort of like not quite know what he's doing, and the mystery, like you hear the stuff in your head then and then you find it.
Yeah,
you know, and this is great because you don't really know what you're playing, and so you can kid yourself that you're not playing anything that's just the same thing because you're looking for the lost chord and it's almost like the closest thing you're going to get, you know. So I do like that occasionally, and then I get bored with that, and then I move on to something else. But
it really becomes part of the sound versus, like, what chord am I playing, or what is this configuration?
Yeah, yeah.
Listening to the sound, and if it feels right, sounds right.
And this other one, Water Under the Bridge, you know, I was playing around with it because it's got a piece that does the, like, and then the second time, I was listening to it thinking, hang on a minute.
Play a little bit.
Yeah, it's like, I'll see if I can. And I came up with a separate bit for it because the note I was singing, the chord was like, it was not really jiving with it. So I changed it. But so it's just a. Let's see. This is new, so I'm. See if I can. Oh, hang on. Oh, I know why. Actually, that wasn't what. Actually, what it should have been is this. I shouldn't have. I had it tuned down a drop D. That was why it was weird. So now. So. The way it should be, yeah. So this other one is, yeah. So that's sort of shit.
I can feel the rage burning in my heart. I turn another page and make a brand new start.
Still learning.
Very cool. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, if you kind of yeah, and it was just I was doing this twice, and then I realized that the note I was singing was this, and it sounded weird with that, and this sounded good, but then I just thought, so I looked for it makes it slightly different instead, because I'm always. Like looking at it very basically, and I just do the same things, and then sometimes when I really analyze it, I get analytical and I think, hang on a minute, if I was like a really whiz guitarist, I'd probably come out with something a bit different, especially as it's not I'm hitting this note and singing this one, and it's like it's not quite right, so this way I got the, you know, and it's just dead simple.
It's those little things that you just discover.
Yeah, and this one's a bit different. And I messed around with different things with that, and I just thought, and I like the suspended chords and all those kind of.
You like those open strings. I don't blame you with that guitar.
Yeah,
you could play open strings all day.
Yeah,
but now because we're already running out of time, I want to talk a little bit about your system and show this, because now what we have set up for him is he has his this is an acoustic preamp, but he also has his vocal plugged into it, and it does some interesting things. So I'm going to let you explain what you're doing here and demo it a little bit, because it's pretty amazing. And I'm going to turn off your mic that I have you talking, we'll hear this mic here.
I was singing in the wrong mic. When I'm singing in the talking mic. You
know? Okay, now he's on the microphone that's going through his preamp.
Yeah, this is can we say a manufacturer's?
Oh, yeah, no, we always talk about gear here.
Yeah, this is a Boss VE8, and it's a bit different to the... It's apparently a fairly new pedal. It's different to a lot of the pedals that... they make strictly for vocals, and you play guitar sort of separately. The good thing with this one, I've got the earlier 83, which is just a guitar pedal for acoustic, and it's a really good pedal, but this one takes it a step further, and you can plug the guitar through it and the voice, so therefore you can...
It's made so you can just plug into a board and you have your own setup that's all controlled.
Yeah, and so you
very
can,
cool.
You can contour the sound of the guitar, which really brings out, especially if it's going through a really good amp, and then you do this with it, like the sounds better than I've had without this. Even though it goes
well, it sounds through. What we're hearing now, his acoustic guitar that he was playing through this whole through the show is coming from that preamp. Yeah. So
and then you can control the parameters, and then of course it does do the harmony thing, but obviously if you want to sort of like follow everything, you've really got to kind of, like you said about MIDI and stuff, you've got to really
he has a harmonizer on here.
Yeah.
So well, let's just let you demonstrate it. Now what you're going to hear here, the background vocals are him from the harmonizer. But it tracks really, and it's intelligent, semi-intelligent.
Yeah. I've got a song called Chasing Angels. This is the bridge part. That's one place where it actually works. Some of the other parts in the song, it doesn't.
Yeah, well,
So I'd play that bit, so.
And I hear the angels calling out.
No, sorry.
Hear the angels calling as we whisper our goodbyes. Like tears, stars are falling from the skies. Still I know when you reach a Shangri-La, gonna show us where you are. Take a look out into the sky tonight, gonna see the brightest
So he was switching real time. He was hitting that, and all those harmonies were coming from the box. It was just him singing there. And that, what was interesting is the major third, minor third, it's covering that pretty well.
Yeah.
It's when you go a little higher, the interval, it doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, and I haven't tried it yet on the, it'll do more than one harmony.
Right, and what we were talking about, what he was mentioning that we were talking about before, there's MIDI in, so you can control the harmony on there, so you can tell it, you can actually with a keyboard or with a sequencer, you can actually have it. How many voices can you do? Is this one voice?
No, I think you can do more than one voice, but I know on there it'll do at least three or four.
So you could have like three part harmony behind you, and you can have it controlled by MIDI, so you can do some really interesting chordal harmony, you know, vocal harmonies, and it's for live, it's quite effective.
Yeah, and I think if you can program that way, there's 50 presets that you can go and put in the memory, and then you can control it with a separate foot switch to split through the memory. And
we were saying to Lori that she should have that so she can be a whole section.
Yeah.
When she sings with anybody, she could literally do the whole of it herself, and just have a keyboard.
Keep all the money.
Because
the thing is, like $300. I mean, it's a steal, really, for what it does.
Yeah, so it's around 300, and you got it from Sweetwater, right?
Yeah, I got it from Sweetwater, and it was a demo one, and it was absolutely pristine when it got there, and it was, like I said, $269 out the door, $30 off, because it was someone had taken it home, and nothing was wrong with it.
Now, the input, is there a special? I know that one of the earlier Boss preamps for guitar had a special preamp or a special input for Piezo. For the Piezo, is that just you just plug it in, or is there?
Yeah, you just plug this one in, and it's got the phantom power. I don't know if it does. I think it does do the stuff with the Piezo thing. Yeah,
because they actually, you know, because a lot of the Piezos are really bright, and they'll filter it so it sounds more natural.
Yeah.
No, the phantom power he's talking about is for, we're using my Audio Technica mic into his box, and that needs power, so. That's what the Phantom for is to keep for his microphone. So he can use a good condenser mic or Electret or something like that, and it's fine. But I mean, it sounds great. I mean, and the better the mic, the better the harmony.
Yeah. And the thing is, I was kind of cool to use that because I haven't got anything that runs on Phantom power at home. And So that's the first time I've used it, and I thought it was pretty cool. You know, just flip the switch, and
it's amazing. Yeah. No, it sounds good, and with that mic, you sound really. It really hits your voice, and the harmony is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like there's two people in the room.
Yeah, and the other thing about it is, if you're really sort of having a bad day and you're not singing in tune, there's a thing that can even fix that. I haven't tried that yet, because I try and do it right.
The auto-tune?
Yeah, it's kind of.
Well, one interesting thing to mention about, you were talking about doing tunings. You didn't want to, you'd love to have extra guitars. One of the guitar tech for Steve Vai, he uses he puts an auto-tune in the guitar, and you literally can do the tunings.
Oh, really? That's great.
I know that the VG system that Roland made,
yeah,
that was what Joni Mitchell used to change her tunings, because she used so many different tunings on there.
Yeah, that's a great thing.
But Thomas Nordic is the name, and he integrates it into the guitar, and you literally can change it, raise it an octave, bring it down, but also just change the whole tuning, and it's by touch.
Yeah.
So you could do it really fast. You could actually do a custom tuning,
hit
it, you know, voice it, hit the thing, and it'll remember it.
Well, I look at like guys like Steve Vai, and I kind of look at them as their real guitarists.
Well, no, Steve's
he's
a monster.
Incredible, yeah.
There are some incredible players, but you know what you do and what you use for the way you use chords as a melodic line, if I can say it. It's
That's
kind
right.
of an oxymoron, but
yeah,
you're using chords to riff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's and to me that's a unique style, and it's not that simple to do without it getting in the way of the voice.
It really is difficult when you're doing stuff, you know, you're trying to get the high bits and you're trying to get all that right, and then you're trying to do this at the same time. And I've got there's one that you got, Oh Yeah, which is, you know. And it changes round when the solo comes in, and it's just slightly different. And
mm-hmm.
It took me forever trying to sing over that, you know, and still play the riff right. You know.
Well, we're out of time, but before, and we're going to play your hit.
The red guitar.
Oh, we never even got to that.
The red bird, yeah.
Well, it just means you have to come back.
I'd love to come back.
We have to do that and go in more into what you're doing here.
Yeah.
But first of all, I want to thank you for coming on. We're going to talk a little bit about Starry Eyes before we play it and take us out. But I just wanted to ask Lori, what's going on? What's happening? Anything we wanted that's coming up that you wanted to mention?
Well, John's actually got a show coming up with Harriet Schock on the 14th.
Yeah,
which is a 14th. Singer-songwriter thing. This
she calls it Snap, I think.
And there's quite a few artists that are on that show, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Bill Berry. There's a lot of people. Yeah,
yeah, and that's over at the Church of Scientology Celebrity Center on the 14th of August.
Yeah, and it's a nice room, because it's like a sort of almost like a outdoor patio kind of thing, but it's covered, and it's really a spacious room. The stage is really big, and you stand on there on your own, and you like this whole stage to sort of like run around if you wanted to.
Harriet's amazing too. She's long-standing great songwriter in this town.
And she puts these shows
times.
On, and there's tons of tables there, and people can sit around the tables. It's a really good listening room. It's really a nice place.
Come on down.
Yeah, yeah. So I appreciate being asked to do that.
Now the latest album was the John Wicks and the Records Anthology, or is there a newer album?
No, it's that one. Yeah, the Rotate.
Okay, anything
that was slightly different?
Anything coming up?
I'm trying to get to record some more stuff. I guess I'm lucky in as much as songs aren't my problem. It's like getting them recorded.
We'll get you down to Rock Cellar, probably.
Yeah,
when it's done.
I did sort of think about doing something like that. I talked to Mike Stern about it. I said it would be great to make an album there if I could.
It will happen.
I've got loads of songs. I mean, that's not my problem. It's like
getting it in there.
And of course, they take a long time to do because of all the harmonies. They work them all out.
I
work out the bass lines and shit.
Well, like those parts to make them all clear and they don't run into each other. That's an art to it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that.
Kind of like I'm like Tom Schultz, except if I need a pedal. I can't, I don't know how to make it. He does. He's like a real genius. You know?
Well, you must use the sunlight on the next album. Promise me. I want to hear what that
I
sounds
think it'll
like.
Sound good, yeah.
And let me know how it sounds with if you tune it down to D.
I'm going to try that, actually. Yeah,
it's an interesting sound. Okay, let's set up the clip. I'm going to take this out. We're going to play Starry Eyes, which is was a famous hit for the records. And this is the newer version, right?
Yeah, this
you gave
is the
me.
Brand
so
new
there's
version.
12 strings in there.
There is a 12 string, and it's mixed way back. So it's like a wall of guitar. There's a lot of guitars on this track.
And
that's a good thing with computerized digital stuff now. Tracks aren't a problem. It's just a question of mixing them is the problem.
And then the middle section, I noticed there's like these clean guitars. It's like almost like a Beach Boy where it's that kind of a clear reverbed type of sound. Now, what were you using there? I want to kind of break it down before we play it, so everybody can listen for it. But what was that? Those guitars were there? Was that the Strat?
No, I didn't have the Strat then. I had some problems with the Junior. The pickup was really his original P90 was wearing out, and I borrowed a guitar I think from Dennis, and I think it was some kind of Gibson. I forget which one now, and that was much better because it was, you know, and then he played his parts on it as well. So so many guitars, and I can't even remember who played what. You know, I ended up, you know, because he's such a great guitarist. I ended up having him play the arpeggios to get him really.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because when I get in the studio, I get real performance anxiety in the studio because it's like having a photo taken and you
think,
if I get like a weird look on my face, it's there forever. And so if you do it wrong, it's there forever. Yeah. So
no, that's okay. Well, listen, we'll play this tune and check out www.johnwicksandtherecords.com. That's his official site where you can see what's going on. And, check out this pedal, the Boss VE8 Acoustic Singer is what it's called. Yeah. And it's very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed with it. I think it's a great little pedal.
And the other thing, sometimes instead of using chorus or something like that, you know, we'll detune something slightly and then double track it, you know, to get that sound.
The old ways, doubling voices.
The old
technique.
And you play it, but it fattens it up because it's like just slightly out of tune.
Yeah.
So it's like a 12 string.
Yeah.
Sense.
Well, some of it sounded like that. Just that little slight difference.
Yeah.
Or even
the
different character of different guitars, it gives you that sound. But some of it, it felt like a 12 string. But it's interesting.
And harmonics.
Yeah. Well, listen, we just scratched the surface. Obviously, we're going to have you back. There's just much more to talk about. So, we're going to have you back. That's it. There's no discussion.
I'd love to, It is a lot more complex than you think it is. Yeah.
You have a Records Facebook band page, right?
Yeah, I've got
like the page,
the
everybody.
The records featuring John Wicks.
There you go.
And I liked it the other day when my manager's assistant, Ellen, who works for Jimmy Webb and a lot of other people, and got to meet him a little while ago, which was awesome. And she'd put... For one of the listing for this show last night, she'd put the record starring John Wicks. I thought, oh wow, I wouldn't have thought of saying that. But I kind of like that.
Well, thank you again. And thank you, Lori,
for
introducing
you, Lori.
This is a great show. Everybody, this is Starry Eyes. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week. And check this out and listen again to these different guitars. There's a lot of different guitar colors, even though he's doing all these interesting chords and it all fits. And that still amazes me how you can do that many guitars and
make it work.
And it really does work.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And here's Starry Eyes.
Thank you.